Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. Yay, the films Beba, Fire of Love, and Vengeance. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing okay, Joe. How are you doing this week?
I'm all right. That was my mild-mannered titling. What did you think?
Well, it is very warm, it seems, every place that one goes these days. But it's a little bit – going to the movies has the extra perk of having a bunch of air conditioning. However, I saw one of these movies just streaming. The other two I saw in movie theaters. And, yeah, it was nice and cool in there. But let us begin with Beba, B-E-B-A. And this is a documentary. Two of our films today are documentaries. And Beba is a very personal movie made by Rebecca Hunt with two T's, Hunt. And it is basically a portrait of herself. Interestingly, it is narrated by Rebecca Hunt. The movie was written by Rebecca Hunt. It was directed by Rebecca Hunt, and it stars Rebecca Hunt. And it is all about Rebecca Hunt, and she is looking into her own life. She's fairly young, but she's had quite a life already, and that is what this movie explores. Again, it is very personal. So who is Rebecca Hunt? Well, she obviously is a filmmaker, but she is also a woman of mixed ancestry, African-American and Latina. And she grew up in New York City in, interesting, a very ritzy neighborhood, Central Park West. But because all her family could afford a teensy little apartment, so an interesting sort of a mixture there of a little bitty modest place in a very upscale neighborhood, which her father insisted on because that was the sort of guy he was. He insisted they had to be in a nice neighborhood and all of that. She had a couple of siblings. And that tells about her growing up, about how she went off to college in upstate New York at Bard College, and then she came back to Manhattan again. Most of the movie, not all of it, takes place in New York City. And we have along the way her musings on her family and her life. And that is what the whole movie is really about. So it turns out that she has sort of a conflicted relationship with her parents, especially her father. There's quite a lot of in the movie about her mother. But her father, she feels, you know, did some wonderful things, like always providing them with a place to stay and all of that, you know, a place to live, decent home, and stuff like that. But she also felt that he had a savage temper, which she herself has inherited. And we see some evidence of that along the way. Again, in this very personal movie, a lot of which is shot very close up with handheld cameras and all of that. So we have her sense of her family and the tensions that she experienced with her family, and the mixed feelings she has about so much of her family experience. But it's certainly not just a movie about family. It's also a movie about her friends, and we see some political discussions, political arguments among her and her friends, which deal with some of today's hot topics, such as ethnic identity and that sort of thing. We find out about other things about her past, such as the fact that she used to spend her summers in South America. And so she has this real sort of somewhat international background. And again, her ethnicity, her mixed ethnicity, African-American and Latina, it all enters into all these different facets of her life, such as having spent summers in South America and so forth. So that's what Beba is about. It is a very personal, close-in portrait of this young woman and her own life. Now, there's two ways you can look at Beba. On one way, you can look at it, and I sort of look at it, by the way, both ways. One way you can look at it is that it's a very sort of unsparing self-portrait where she uncovers her own faults, her own flaws, especially that business about temper and so forth and so on. You can also look at it as just a very self-indulgent, narcissistic sort of vanity project where it's all a movie made by a certain person. And it's all about me, me, me. And I can look at this, it's like the famous duck and rabbit thing where you blink your eyes and it changes from one into the other, that picture. It's sort of like that. I can sort of go back and forth between these two views. I had a good time watching Beba. I was very much absorbed in it, although I was sometimes pretty fed up with the main character and with her very self-indulgent ways. So I have mixed feelings about Baba, but again, I did have a good time watching it. If you're interested in a very first-person portrait of some of the political and sociological and ethnic and racial divides that are going on in America today, Baba is a good movie to watch. It has some things to reveal about that. It does not reveal them in an academic way, even though some of the movie is about college experience and all that. One of her professors speaks quite a lot in the movie. But it's a very much an emotional portrait of these things. And it's basically an emotional portrait of the main character. And on that level, I found it interesting, if flawed, and sometimes sort of aggravating. So mixed feelings about Baba, but worth seeing. And I'm very glad that it's getting into general distribution, because I'm always for the little independent movies that you don't hear so much about. Another little independent movie is Fire of Love, which is directed by Sara Dosa, and which is another documentary, and which is about a couple of volcanologists, a very rare thing in the universe. A couple of volcanologists who met each other, bonded partly over their love of volcanoes, and spent the rest of their lives studying volcanoes, which is kind of like being one of these hurricane chasers. You have to go, you find out there's a volcano that's going to erupt sometime soon, and the movie makes a big point of this. You can never tell exactly when a volcano is going to erupt, even though you know the signs are there, but they have to rush off then and see the volcano erupt and take movies of it and take pictures of it and do chemical analyses and geological analyses and so forth and so on. And that's what they do. Well, they are obviously a very loving couple. Their names, by the way, are Katja Kraft and Maurice Kraft. And the movie lets you know at the very beginning that their profession and their way of life and the thing that they love most in the world, volcanoes, was what killed them. Because when we get to the end of the movie, we get the particulars of that. But they did die, in fact, in a volcano eruption. But they had a wonderful life chasing these volcanoes and going from place to place and doing all of their analyses and their recording and so forth and so on. Very early in the movie, Maurice Kraft does a very big thing about how it's wrong to classify volcanoes the way that academics tend to do, because they're all different. Every single volcano is different from every other one, and you can't make any sort of generalities about them. Well, of course, you can make generalities about volcanoes. You can make generalities about practically anything. And in fact, eventually, the crafts do exactly that. But they basically say that there are two kinds, the red ones and the gray ones. The red ones are easier to deal with. They're less dangerous because you always know where the lava flow is going. You always know where the red hot dangerous stuff is going. The gray ones are more dangerous because they're much more unpredictable and you don't always know what's going to happen from one moment to the next. And we get to see a lot in this movie because they were very, very daring. I would almost say fearless. And they loved to get up close to these things. They had different measures of tolerance between the two of them, but basically they both just loved it. Sometimes they'll be really, really up close and you'll say, how can they do that? And then they'll suddenly run and they'll put on their protective gear and they'll go back in and they'll get just as close again. So there's some remarkable stuff to watch in this movie. It's a film about, oh, a kind of neighborhood, namely of an active volcano, which is going to blow its top very soon, where most of us are not very often, if ever, going to get in our lives. And we have this this really, really, really interesting interesting thing. It is Miranda July who narrates Fire of Love. And I have to say, I'm not crazy about the narration. The narration tends to be sort of cute. The material itself is sometimes very scientific and sometimes very sort of romantic because of the fact that these two had this great love of volcanoes that bonded them through their whole adult lives. But the narration tends to be sort of cute and even sentimental, and I'm not too crazy about it. But every other aspect of Fire of Love I had a good time with. It's a really interesting documentary about a really unusual subject. And again, the main characters, Katja Kraft and Maurice Kraft, they're very photogenic. They made movies, they did TV appearances, especially Maurice Kraft, and we get to see what made them so charismatic. So they were sort of leaders in the field of volcanology, especially the sort of popularity or popularizing of volcanology. We get a very good sense of how that managed to be, because they're very, the camera loves them and they love the camera. So a very interesting movie, Fire of Love, a sad ending, but a whole lot of really riveting close-up footage of volcanoes and explosions and lava flows and all that. And if you have any interest in that whatever, then Fire of Love is the movie for you. And now let us round things out by going to a fiction film, Vengeance. Vengeance is written and directed by B.J. Novak, whom many people, including me, know mainly for his work as playing the character of Ryan on the great TV sitcom The Office. And I've always regarded him as sort of an interesting character in The Office because he's not one of the more charismatic characters. Ryan, he's just sort of there. He starts out as a temp in The Office, and he's just sort of there, and he does various things along the way. And he's an interesting character, but he's nowhere near as memorable as the other characters are. He's also, by the way, not the first character to get into making feature films. John Krasinski, who plays one of the most important characters in The Office, one of the absolutely central characters of The Office, has been making those movies called A Quiet Place, among other things. So he also has moved into directing and writing feature films. But this is B.J. Novak's movie, and again, it is called Vengeance. And that makes you expect maybe something which is really violent and, you know, oh, full of vengeance and stuff like that. It's a milder movie than that and a more interesting movie than a lot of films that would be on that sort of subject are nowadays. It's a flawed movie, but it's really interesting. So B.J. Novak plays a character, a young man named Ben, and he is a successful young man. He's a writer for The New Yorker, but he wants to get into podcasts. That's what he really wants to do. He wants to make a podcast. So one night, he gets a very mysterious phone call. He lives in New York, which comes from Texas, and it says, "Your girlfriend is dead." Well, he has no idea what this is talking about. He doesn't have a girlfriend. It turns out that a woman who he hooked up with a few times has just died in Texas. And for reasons which I thought were rather strange, I don't think the movie develops this very well, but he for some reason decides to go down and attend the funeral of this young woman. He's sort of implored to do this by her brother, who is the one who called him up. So our main character, Ben, goes down to Texas from Manhattan to attend this funeral. And then the brother says, I want vengeance on whoever killed her. I want to get revenge. She died of an overdose, but she would never even touch an Advil. She couldn't possibly have died in an overdose. She must have been murdered. And I want vengeance, and you're going to help me get this vengeance. Well, Ben should, right at that moment, head straight back to New York and get back to his normal life as a writer for The New Yorker and maybe develop a podcast. But he thinks, wow, I'm down here in Texas. All these people are very different from anybody else I know in my life. This could be material for my podcast. So I'll pretend I'm going to help this brother get vengeance on the person who he thinks murdered his sister, and then we'll take things from there. So this is what the main thrust of the movie is. It is a fish-out-of-water movie, which means it's basically a comedy. We have this young New Yorker who is down there in Texas with all these people unlike anybody he ever knows. And, of course, he finds out that a whole lot of the stereotypes about people down in rural Texas, you know, the guns, the Americanism, all this stuff like this are true. But he also discovers that people are more varied and more interesting than he ever realized before. And he gets to deepen a little bit and mature a little bit as he realizes how people are so much more interesting and so much more complicated than he ever would have expected. At the same time, the movie pokes a lot of fun at him as a New Yorker. He has his own flaws and foibles and all that sort of stuff. I know one moment that I rather like in the movie, at one point he's out with the Texas family and they're at sort of a fairground and they're all getting deep-fried Twinkies. And he says, "Could I have mine grilled?" I think that's really a rather amusing joke. And there's quite a lot of that sort of thing in the movie. So we have him, you know, we have the B.J. Novak character poking fun at the Northern New Yorker with his supposed sophistication and also poking a whole lot of fun at the Texans and their guns and their this and that. There's a lot of guns in this movie. So along the way, he gets to meet various characters, one of whom is a record producer, of all things, a record producer down in rural Texas, who is really gives the best performance in the movie. And it's Ashton Kutcher, who I don't usually think of as a terrific actor, but he is so, so good as the supporting character in the movie, this record producer. There's a lot of other people in the movie, most of whom are not very familiar faces, and do a very nice job, give a very nice, well-rounded cast, and are believable Texans and sometimes believable New Yorkers and all of that. Now, interestingly, Vengeance is mainly a comedy, despite its title, but near the end, and I won't give this away, it turns really dark. That's a surprise. And I like movies that surprise me. I'm not quite sure that this movie really convinced me that it was doing a thing that really made a whole lot of sense when it became really dark. It was surprising in a way that was not entirely satisfactory. So Vengeance is mainly a comedy, but it has dark elements all the way through, and near the end it turns very dark. So that's it. And then the very, very end, the last few moments, are sort of ambiguous and open-ended and sort of leaves you wondering and able to think about things in the future. So is Vengeance a great movie? No. Is it a good movie? Yes. Is it an interesting movie? Yes. Does it portend a promising future for writer, director, actor BJ Novak? It does. So I'm basically happy with Vengeance, and I think that everybody who goes off to see it will have a fairly good time. And that is my partly documentary, partly fictional story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as always, although we're not sure you should confess that you're happy with Vengeance. It's possibly bad for your image. David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films, Beba, Fire of Love, and Vengeance.